Head for light, any indication of safety. How much longer could he keep running? How much farther could she go? Sam's voice came back to her. Picture the finish line in your head. You have to want it more than the person behind you. Zachariah wanted something. Charlie wanted something more, to get away, to get help for her sister, to find Rusty so he could figure out a way to make it all better. Suddenly, Charlie's head jerked back. Her feet flew out in front of her, her back slammed into the ground. She saw her breath huff out of her mouth like it was a real thing. Zach was on top of her. His hands were everywhere, grabbing her breasts, pulling her shorts. His teeth clashed against her closed mouth. Charlie scratched at his eyes. She tried to bring up her knee into his crotch, but she couldn't bend her leg. Zachariah sat up, straddling her. He worked his belt back through the buckle. His weight was too much. He was pushing the air out of her. Charlie's mouth opened. She had no breath left to scream. She was dizzy. Vomit burned up her throat. Her shorts were wrenched down. He flipped her over like she was nothing. She tried again to scream, but he shoved her face into the ground. Dirt filled her mouth. He grabbed her hair in his fist. She felt a tearing deep inside her body as he ripped into her. His teeth bit down on her shoulder. He grunted like a pig as he raped her behind. She smelled rot from the earth, from his mouth, from what he was pushing inside of her. Charlie squeezed her eyes shut.
I am not here. I am not here. I am not here.
Every time she convinced herself that this wasn't happening, that she was in the kitchen at the red brick house doing her homework, that she was running the track at school, that she was hiding in Sam's closet listening to her talk on the phone to Peter Alexander, Zachariah did something new and the pain wrenched her back into reality. He was not finished. Charlotte's arms flopped uselessly as he turned her over. He shoved inside of her from the front. She was finally numb. Her mind went blank. She was aware of things, but as if from a remove, her body shifting up and down as he started to thrust, her mouth hanging open, his tongue jamming down her throat, his fingers digging into her breasts like he was trying to rip them away from her body. She looked up, past his ugly, contorted face, past the bowed trees, their crooked limbs, the night sky. The moon was blue against the dark expanse. Stars were scattered, indistinct pinholes. Charlie closed her eyes. She wanted darkness. But she saw Sam twisting through the air. She could hear the thump of her sister's body hitting the grave like it was happening all over again. And then she saw Gamma on the kitchen floor, back to the cabinet. Bright white bone, pieces of heart and lung, cords of tendon and arteries and veins, and life spilling out of her gaping wounds. Gamma had told her to run. Sam had ordered her to get away. They would not want this. They had sacrificed their lives for Charlotte, but not for this.
No!
Charlotte screamed, her hands turning into fists. She pounded into Zach's chest, swung so hard at his jaw that his head whipped around. Blood sprayed out of his mouth, big globs of it, not like the tiny dots from Gamma.
Fucking bitch!
He reared back his hand to punch her. Charlotte saw a blur out of the corner of her eye.
Get off her!
Daniel flew through the air, tackling Zach to the ground. His fists swung back and forth, arms windmilling as he beat his brother.
Motherfucker! He yelled. I'll fucking kill you!
Charlotte backed away from the men. Her hands pressed deep into the earth as she forced herself to stand. Blood poured down her legs. Cramps made her double over. She stumbled. She spun around in a circle, blind as Sam had been. She couldn't get her bearings. She didn't know which way to run, but she knew that she had to keep moving. Her ankle screamed as she ran back into the woods. She didn't look for the weather tower. She didn't listen for the stream or try to find Sam or head toward the HP. She kept running, then walking. Then she felt so exhausted that she wanted to crawl. Finally, she gave in to it, collapsing to her hands and knees. She listened for footsteps behind her, but all she could hear was her own heavy breaths panting out of her mouth. Blood dripped between her legs. His stuff was in there, festering, decaying her insides. Charlotte threw up. Bile hit the ground and splattered back into her face. She wanted to lie down, to close her eyes, to go to sleep and wake up in a week when this was all over. But she couldn't. Zachariah Culpepper. Daniel Culpepper. Brothers. Charlotte would see them both dead. She would watch the executioner strap them to the wooden chair and put the metal hat on their heads with the sponge underneath so that they wouldn't catch on fire, and she would look between Zachariah Culpepper's legs to watch the urine come out when he realized that he was going to be electrocuted to death. Charlotte got up. She stumbled. Then she walked. Then she jogged, and then, suddenly, miraculously, she saw a light. The second farmhouse. Charlotte reached out her hand as if she could touch it. She swallowed back a sob. Her ankle could barely hold her as she limped through the freshly plowed fields. She kept her eyes on the porch light, using it as a beacon, a lighthouse that could guide her away from the rocks. I am here. I am here. I am here. There were four steps up the back porch. Charlotte stared at them, trying not to think of the steps at the HP. The way she had run up them two at a time just a few hours ago, kicked off her shoes, peeled off her socks, and found Gamma cursing in the kitchen.
Fudge, Charlie whispered. Fudge.
Her ankle buckled on the first step. She held onto the shaky railing. She blinked at the porch light, which was bright white, like a flame. Blood had dripped into her eyes. Charlotte used her fists to rub it away. The welcome mat had a plump, red strawberry on it with a smiling face, arms, and legs. Her feet left dark prints on the mat. She raised her hand. Her wrist had a springiness, like the rubber band on a paddle ball. Charlotte had to steady one hand with the other so that she could knock on the door. A bloody, wet impression of her knuckles was left on the painted white wood. In the house, she heard a chair scrape back. Light footsteps across the floor. A woman's chipper voice asked, "Who could that be knocking so late?" Charlotte did not answer. There were no locks that clicked, no chain that slid back. The door opened. A blonde woman stood in the kitchen. Her hair was pinned back in a loose ponytail. She was older than Charlotte. Pretty. Her eyes went wide. Her mouth opened. Her hand fluttered to her chest as if she had been hit by an arrow.
"Oh," the woman said. "My God. My God. Daddy!"
She reached for Charlotte, but she didn't seem to know where to touch her.
"Come in. Come in."
Charlotte took one step, then another. Then she was standing inside the kitchen. She shivered, though the space was warm. Everything was so clean, so brightly lit. The wallpaper was yellow with red strawberries. A matching border rimmed the tops of the walls. The toaster had a knitted cozy with a strawberry stitched onto the side. The kettle on the stove was red. The clock on the wall, a cat with moving eyes, was red.
"Good Lord in heaven,"
a man whispered. He was older, bearded. His eyes were almost perfectly round behind his glasses. Charlotte stepped away until her back was against the wall. He asked the woman,
What the hell happened?
She just knocked on the door.
The woman was crying. Her voice trilled like a piccolo.
I don't know. I don't know.
That's one of the Quinn girls.
He opened the curtains. He looked outside.
Are they still out there?
Zachariah Culpepper. Daniel Culpepper. Sam. The man reached his hands to the top of the cabinet. He pulled down a rifle, a box of bullets.
Give me the phone.
Charlotte started to shake again. The rifle was long, its barrel like a sword that could cut her open. The woman reached for the cordless phone on the wall. She knocked it to the ground. She scooped it up. Her hands were still fluttering, their motions chaotic, uncontrollable. She raised the antenna. She handed the phone to her father. He said,
I'll call the police. Lock the door behind me.
The woman did as she was told, her fingers clumsy as she tried to turn the latch. She clasped together her hands. She looked at Charlotte. She took a quick breath. She glanced around the room.
I don't know what...
She put her hand to her mouth. She was looking at the mess on the floor. Charlotte saw it, too. Blood was pooling around her feet. It was coming from her insides, sliding down her legs, past her knees, her ankles, steady and slow like the trickle that came from the farmhouse faucet if you didn't hit it hard enough with a hammer. She moved her foot. The blood followed her. She remembered learning about snails, the way they left a slick slime behind them.
Sit down,
the woman said. She sounded steadier now, more sure of herself.
It's okay, sweetheart. You can sit down.
She gently pressed her fingers to Charlotte's shoulder, guided her to the chair.
The police will come, she said. You're safe now.
Charlotte did not sit down. The woman did not look like she felt safe.
I'm Miss Heller.
She knelt down in front of Charlotte. She brushed back her hair.
You're Charlotte. Is that right?
Charlotte nodded.
Oh, Angel.
Miss Heller kept stroking her hair.
I'm sorry. Whatever happened to you, I'm so sorry.
Charlotte felt a weakness in her knees. She did not want to sit, but she had to. The pain was like a knife jamming into her insides. Her bottom ached. She could feel something warm coming out of her front like she was peeing herself again. She asked Miss Heller,
Can I have some ice cream?
The woman said nothing at first. Then she stood. She gathered a bowl. Some vanilla ice cream, a spoon. She placed it all on the table. The smell brought a surge of bile into Charlotte's throat. She swallowed it back down. She picked up the spoon. She ate the ice cream, shoving it into her mouth as fast as she could.
Slow down, Miss Heller said. You'll make yourself sick.
Charlotte wanted to be sick. She wanted him out of her. She wanted to cleanse herself. She wanted to kill herself.
Mama, what would happen if I ate two bowls of ice cream? Really big ones.
Your intestines would burst and you would die. Charlotte devoured a second bowl of ice cream. She used her hands because the spoon was not big enough. She reached for the container, but Miss Heller stopped her. She looked aghast. She asked Charlotte,
What happened to you?
Charlotte was winded from eating so fast. She could hear her breath whistling through her nose. Her shorts were wet with blood. The strawberry cushion on the chair was completely saturated. She felt the dripping between her legs, but she knew that it was not just blood. It was him. It was Zach Culpepper. He had left his stuff inside of her. The vomit roiled up again. This time she couldn't stop it. Charlotte slapped her hand to her mouth. Miss Heller picked her up by the waist. She ran down the hall, carrying Charlotte to the bathroom. Charlotte threw up so hard that she thought her stomach would come out of her mouth. She gripped the cold sides of the toilet. Her eyes bulged. Her throat burned. Her intestines felt as if razors were inside. She yanked down her shorts. She sat on the toilet. She felt a torrent of fluid rush from her body. Blood. Feces. Him. Charlotte cried out from the pain. She folded at the waist. She opened her mouth. She screamed out an anguished wail.
She wanted her mother.
She needed her mother.
Oh, sweetheart.
Miss Heller was on the other side of the door. She was kneeling down again. Charlotte could hear her voice coming through the keyhole.
He said unto them, Let the little children come unto me, and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these.
Charlotte squeezed shut her eyes. Tears flowed. She breathed through her open mouth. She heard the heavy drops of blood hitting water. It would not end. This was never going to end.
Sweet baby,
Miss Heller said.
Let God carry this burden.
Charlotte shook her head. Her blood-soaked hair slapped at her face. She kept her eyes closed. She saw Sam spinning, somersaulting through the air. The mist as the bullet entered her brain. The heavy spray of blood as Gamma's chest exploded.
My sister,
Charlotte whispered.
She's dead. What's that, baby?
Miss Heller had cracked open the door.
What did you say? My sister.
Charlotte's teeth were chattering.
She's dead. My mother's dead.
Miss Heller held onto the doorknob as she sunk to the floor. She said nothing. Charlotte looked down at the white tiles at her feet. She could see black spots in her vision. Blood dripped from her open mouth. She rolled off some toilet paper. She held it to her nose. The bone felt broken. Miss Heller came into the room. She turned on the sink faucet. Charlotte tried to wipe herself. She could feel strips of flesh hanging down between her legs. The blood would not stop. It was never going to stop. She pulled up her shorts, but a wave of dizziness kept her from standing. She sat back down on the toilet. She stared at the framed picture of a strawberry patch on the wall.
It's all right.
Miss Heller wiped Charlotte's face with a wet cloth. Her hands trembled along with her voice.
But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and ye shall go forth and grow up as—
A loud knock shook the back door. Banging. Screaming. Miss Heller's hand went to Charlotte's chest, keeping her still.
Judith!
The old man yelled.
Judith!
The back door splintered open. Miss Heller grabbed Charlotte again, picking her up by the middle. Charlie felt her feet leave the ground. She braced her hands against the woman's shoulders. Her ribs felt crushed as Miss Heller ran down the hall.
Charlotte!
The word was pained, like the sound you would hear from a dying animal. Miss Heller skidded to a stop. She turned around. Her grip around Charlotte's waist slowly released. Rusty was standing at the end of the hallway. He leaned heavily against the wall. His chest was heaving. He gripped a handkerchief in his hand. Charlotte felt her feet touch the ground, her knees folded, unable to support her weight. Rusty staggered down the hallway. His shoulder bumped the wall, then the other wall. Then he was on his knees, and then he was holding Charlotte.
My baby,
he cried. enveloping her body in his.
My treasure.
Charlotte felt the slow release of her muscles. Her father was like a drug. She became a rag doll in his arms.
My baby,
he said.
Gamma, I know,
Rusty wailed. She felt his chest shake as he struggled to control his sorrow.
I know, sweetheart, I know.
Charlotte began to sob, not from the pain, but from fear, because she had never seen her father cry.
I've got you,
he rocked her.
Daddy's here. I've got you.
Charlotte was crying so hard that she couldn't open her eyes.
Sam! I know, he said. We'll find her.
They buried her.
Rusty let out a howl of despair.
It was the Culpeppers,
Charlotte said, knowing their names, telling them to Rusty was the only thing that had kept her moving.
Zack and his brother.
It doesn't matter.
He pressed his lips to the top of her head.
We got an ambulance coming. They're going to take care of you.
Daddy.
Charlotte lifted her head. She put her mouth close to his ear. She whispered.
Zack put his thing inside of me.
Rusty's arms slowly fell away. It was like the air had been let out of him. His mouth dropped open. He crumbled to the floor. His eyes scanned back and forth as he looked at Charlotte's face. His throat worked again. He tried to speak, but all that came out was a whimper.
Daddy,
she whispered again. Rusty put his fingers to her mouth. He bit his lip like he didn't want to speak, but he had to. He asked,
he raped you.
Charlotte nodded. Rusty's hand dropped like a stone. He looked away. He shook his head. His tears had turned into two rivers running down the sides of his face. Charlotte felt the shame of his silence. Her father knew the things that men like Zachariah Culpepper did. He could not even look at her.
Sorry,
Charlotte said.
I didn't run fast enough.
Rusty's eyes went to Miss Heller, then finally, slowly back to Charlotte.
It's not your fault.
He cleared his throat. He said it again.
It's not your fault, baby. Do you hear me?
Charlotte heard him, but she did not believe him.
What happened to you?
Rusty said, sounding strident.
It's not your fault, but we can't tell anybody else, okay?
Charlotte could only stare. You didn't have to lie if something wasn't your fault. Rusty said,
it's a private thing. And we're not going to tell anybody, okay?
He looked up at Judith Heller again.
I know what lawyers do to girls who are raped. I'm not going to put my daughter through that hell. I won't let people treat her like she's damaged.
He wiped his eyes with the back of his hand. His voice became stronger.
They'll hang for this. Those two boys are murderers, and they'll die for it, but please don't let them take my daughter with them. Please. It's too much. It's just too much.
He waited, his eyes on Miss Heller. Charlie turned around. Miss Heller looked down at her. She nodded.
Thank you. Thank you.
Rusty rested his hand on Charlotte's shoulder. He looked at her face again, saw the blood and bone and sticks and leaves that had become glued to her body. He touched the ripped seam of her shorts. His tears started to flow again. He was thinking about what had been done to her. What had been done to Sam. To Gamma. He dropped his face into his hands.
His sobs turned into howls. He fell against the wall, racked by grief. Charlotte tried to swallow. Her throat was too dry. She could not clear the taste of sour milk. She was torn up inside. She could still feel the steady flow of blood sliding down the inside of her leg.
"Daddy," Charlotte said, "I'm sorry."
"No." He grabbed her, shook her. "Don't ever apologize, Charlotte. Do you hear me?" He seemed so angry that Charlotte dared not speak. "I'm sorry," Rusty stuttered out. He got up on his knees. He wrapped his hand around the back of her head, pressed his face to her face, their noses touching. She could smell cigarette smoke and his musky cologne.
"You listen to me, Charlie Bear. Are you listening?"
Charlotte stared into his eyes. Red lines spoked out from the blue irises. He said,
"It's not your fault. I am your daddy, and I'm telling you that none of this is your fault."
He waited.
"Okay?"
Charlotte nodded.
"Okay."
Rusty whimpered out another breath. He swallowed hard. He was still openly weeping.
"Now, do you remember all those boxes your mama brought home from the thrift store?"
Charlotte had forgotten about the boxes. No one would be around to unpack them now. It was just Charlotte and Rusty. There would never be anyone else.
"Listen to me, baby."
Rusty kept his hands to her face.
"I want you to take what that nasty man did to you, and I want you to put it in one of those boxes, okay?"
He waited, clearly desperate for her to agree. Charlotte let herself nod.
"All right," he said.
"All right.
Well, then your daddy's gonna get some tape, and we're gonna tape up that box together, sweetheart."
His voice warbled again. His eyes desperately searched hers.
"Do you hear me? We're gonna close up that box and tape it shut."
Again she nodded.
"Then we're gonna put that mean old box on a shelf, and we're gonna leave it there. And we're not gonna think about it or look at it until we're good and goddamn ready, okay?"
Charlotte kept nodding because that's what he wanted.
"Good girl."
Rusty kissed her cheek. He pulled her close to his chest. Charlotte's ear folded against his shirt. She could feel his heart thumping beneath the skin and bone. He had sounded so frantic, so afraid. He asked,
"We're gonna be okay, aren't we?"
He held her so tight that she couldn't nod, but Charlotte understood what her father wanted. He needed her to flip on her logical switch, but for real this time. Gamma was gone. Sam was gone. Charlotte had to be strong. She had to be the good daughter who took care of her father.
"Okay, Charlie Bear."
Rusty kissed the top of her head.
"Can we do that?"
Charlotte imagined the empty closet in the bachelor farmer's bedroom. The door hung open. She saw the box on the floor. Brown cardboard. Packing tape sealed it closed. She saw the label. Top secret. She watched Rusty hefting the box onto his shoulder, sliding it onto the top shelf, pushing it back until shadows placed it in darkness.
"Can we do that, baby?"
he begged.
"Can we just close that box?"
Charlie imagined herself shutting the closet door. She said,
"Yes, Daddy."
She would never open the box again. Chapter 16. Charlie could not look at Sam. She kept her head buried in her hands. She stayed bent over in the chair. She had not thought about her promise to Rusty in decades. She had been the good daughter, the obedient daughter, putting her secret on a shelf, letting the dark shadows of time obscure the memories. Their devil's pact had never felt like a part of the story that mattered, but she could see now that it mattered almost more than anything else. She told Sam, "I guess the moral of the story is that bad things happen to me in hallways." Charlie felt Sam's hand on her back. All that she wanted in the world right now was to lean into her sister, to put her head in Sam's lap and let Sam hold her while she cried. Instead, she stood up. She found her shoes. She rested her hip against Rusty's casket as she put them on. "It was Mary Lynn. I thought Lynn was her last name, not Huckabee." She felt nauseated when she recalled Huck's cold reaction when he learned that Charlie was Rusty Quinn's daughter. "Do you remember the pictures of her in the barn?" Sam nodded. "Her neck was stretched at least a foot. That's what I remember. That she looked like a giraffe, almost. And the expression on her face." Charlie wondered if she'd had the same agonized expression when Rusty had found her in the hallway. "We thought you were dead. We knew Mama was dead. He didn't say, but I know that he was afraid that I would hang myself, or find some way to kill myself like Mary Lynn." Charlie shrugged. "He was probably right. It was just too much." Sam kept silent for a moment. She had never been given to fidgeting, but she smoothed out the leg of her pants. "Did the doctors believe that was the cause of your miscarriages?" Charlie almost laughed. Sam always wanted the scientific explanation. She told her sister, "After the second one, which was really the third, I went to a fertility expert in Atlanta. Ben thought I was at a conference. I told the doctor what happened, what really happened. I laid it out for her, things that even Dad didn't know, that he'd used his hands, his fists, his knife." Sam cleared her throat. Her expression, as always, was obscured by her dark glasses. "And?" "And she ran tests and did scans, and then she said something about the thinness of this wall or scarring on that tube, and she drew this diagram on a sheet of paper, but I said, 'Give it to me straight.' And she did." "I have an inhospitable womb." Charlie laughed bitterly at the phrase, which sounded like something you'd read on a travel review site. "My uterine environment is not suitable for hosting a fetus. The doctor was amazed I'd managed to get so far into my second trimester." Sam asked, "Did she say it was because of what happened?" Charlie shrugged. "She said it could be, but that there was no way to know for sure. I don't know. A guy jams the handle of a knife up your twat. It makes sense that you can't have babies." "The last time," Sam said, always zeroing in on the deductive fallacy, "you said Dandy Walker is a syndrome, not resultant of a uterine malformation. Is there a genetic component?" Charlie couldn't go down this road again. "You're right. That was my last time. I'm too old now. Any pregnancy would be considered too high risk. The clock has ticked down." Sam took off her glasses. She rubbed her eyes. "I should have been here for you."
"And I should have never asked you to come."
She smiled, remembering something Rusty had said 2 days ago. "Our familiar impasse." "You need to tell Ben."
"There's that 'you need' again." Charlie blew her nose. She had not missed Sam's bossy older sisterness over the years. "I think it's too late for me and Ben."
The words sounded flippant, but after her disastrous attempts at seduction, she had to stop denying the possibility that her husband would not come back. Charlie couldn't even work up the courage to ask him to stay last night because she was too afraid he would tell her no again. She said, "Ben was a saint when it happened. Every time. I really mean that. I just don't understand where all that goodness comes from. Not his mother. Not his sisters. God, they were all awful.
They wanted to know every detail like it was gossip. They practically set up their own hotline. And you don't know what it's like to be pregnant and buying baby furniture and planning your maternity leave and being as big as a Mack truck. Then, a week later, you go to the grocery store and everybody who was smiling at you before can't even look you in the eye, Charlie asked. I'm assuming you don't know what it's like. Sam shook her head. Charlie was not surprised. She could not see her sister risking the physical toll a child would take on her body. Charlie said, I turned into such a bitch. I would hear myself. I can hear myself now, 10 minutes ago, yesterday, every fucking day before that, and think, shut up. Let it go. But I don't. I can't. And adoption? Charlie tried not to bristle at the question. Her baby had died. It wasn't like a dog, where you could get a new one a few months later to take away the loss. I kept waiting for Ben to bring it up. But he kept saying he was happy with me, that we were a team, that he loved the idea of the two of us growing old together. She shrugged. Maybe he was waiting for me to bring it up, like the gift of the Magi, but with a toxic uterus. Sam put on her glasses. You say that it's already over with Ben. What do you lose if you tell him what happened? It's what I gain, Charlie said. I don't want his pity. I don't want him to stay with me because he feels an obligation. She leaned her hand on the closed casket. She was talking to Rusty as much as Sam. Ben would be happier with someone else. Utter bullshit, Sam said, her tone clipped. You have no right to decide on his behalf. Charlie felt like Ben had already decided. She could not blame him. She was hard-pressed to believe any 41-year-old man would be unhappy with a limber 26-year-old. He's so great with kids. He loves them so much. So do you. But he's not the one keeping me from having children. What if he was? Charlie shook her head. It didn't work like that. Do you want a minute alone? She indicated the casket. To say goodbye? Sam frowned. To whom would I be speaking? Charlie crossed her arms. Can I have a minute? Sam's eyebrow arched up, but she managed for once to withhold her opinion. I'll be outside. Charlie watched her sister leave the room. Sam wasn't limping as much today. That, at least, was a relief. Charlie could not stand seeing her back in Pikeville, so out of her element, so unprotected. Sam could not turn a corner. She could not walk down the street without everyone knowing exactly what had happened. Except for Judge Stanley Lyman. If there had been a way for Charlie to run up to the bench and slap the bastard across the face for humiliating her sister, Charlie would have risked being arrested. Sam had always worked so hard to hide the things that were wrong with her. But you did not have to do more than study her for a few minutes to notice the peculiarities. Her posture, always too stiff. The way she walked with her arms tight to her sides rather than letting them swing freely. The way she held her head at an angle, always wary of her blind side. Then there was her precise, maddeningly didactic way of speaking. Sam's tone had always been sharp, but after being shot, it was as if every word was folded around the corner of a straight edge. Sometimes, you could hear a hesitation as if she searched for the correct word. More rarely, you heard the sound of her breath as she pushed out sound, using her diaphragm the way the speech pathologist had trained her. The doctors, the pathologists, the therapists, there had been a whole team surrounding Sam. They all had opinions, recommendations, warnings, and none of them understood that Sam would defy them all. She was not a normal person. She had not been that way before being shot, and she certainly was not that way during her recovery. Charlie could remember one of the doctors telling Rusty that the damage to Sam's brain could shave off as many as 10 IQ points. Charlie had almost laughed. 10 points would be devastating for any normal human being. For Sam, It meant that she went from being a genius-level prodigy to just really, really fucking smart. Sam was 17 years old, 2 years on from the gunshot, when she was offered a full scholarship to Stanford. Was she happy? Charlie could hear Rusty's question echoing in her head. She turned around to face her father's hideous casket. She rested her hand on the lid. The paint had chipped in the corner, which she supposed was what happened when you hung on it like a demented, foul-mouthed monkey. Sam did not seem happy, but she seemed content. In retrospect, Charlie should have told her father that contentedness was the more laudable goal. Sam was thriving in her legal practice. Her temper, once a roiling tempest, finally seemed to be under control. The anger she had carried around like a brick in her chest was clearly gone. Of course, she was still pedantic and annoying, but that came with being their mother's child. Charlie tapped her fingers on the casket. The irony was not lost on Charlie that both she and her sister had failed miserably in matters of life and death. Sam had not been able to ease her husband's suffering. Charlie had not been able to provide a place of safety for her growing child.
"And here they come again,"
Charlie mumbled as tears filled her eyes. She was sick of crying. She didn't want to do it anymore. She didn't want to be a bitch anymore. She didn't want to feel sad anymore. She didn't want to be without her husband anymore. As hard as it was to hold on to things, it was even harder to let them go. She pulled over one of the reflecting chairs. She yanked off the baby blue satin cover, because this was not a teenage girl's sweet 16 party. Charlie sat down on the hard plastic. She had told Sam her secret. She had opened the box. Why did she not feel different? Why had things not miraculously changed? Years ago, Rusty had dragged Charlie to a therapist. She was 16. Sam was living in California. Charlie had started acting out in school, dating the wrong boys, screwing the wrong boys, slicing the tires on the cars that the wrong boys drove. Rusty had probably assumed that Charlie would tell the truth about what had happened, just as Charlie had assumed that Rusty would expect her to leave that part out. Hello, familiar impasse. The therapist, an earnest man in a sweater vest, had tried to take Charlie back to that day, to the kitchen in the farmhouse, to that damp room where Gamma had left a pot of water on the stove to boil while she had gone down the hallway in search of Sam. The man had told Charlie to close her eyes and picture herself at the kitchen table, her hands working the folds of the paper plate as she tried to turn it into an airplane. Instead of hearing a car in the driveway, he told her to imagine Jesus walking through the door. He was a Christian therapist. Well-meaning, undoubtedly sincere, but he thought that Jesus was the answer to a lot of things. "Keep your eyes closed," he had told Charlie. "Picture Jesus lifting you up." Instead of Gamma grabbing the shotgun, instead of Sam being shot, instead of Charlie running through the woods to Miss Heller's house. Charlie had kept her eyes closed as instructed. She had sat on her hands to keep them still. She could remember swinging her legs, pretending to play along, but she saw Lindsay Wagner, not Jesus Christ, coming to her rescue. The bionic woman used her super strength to punch Daniel Culpepper in the face. She karate kicked Zachariah in the balls. She moved in slow motion, her long hair swinging as the ch-ch-ch-ch bionic sound played in the background. Charlie had never been particularly good at following instructions, though she seethed with humiliation to think that the frumpy licensed social worker with a bad haircut that Ben had dragged her to had been right about at least one thing. Something horrible that had happened to Charlie almost 3 decades ago was screwing up her life now. Had screwed it up. Because her husband was gone. Her sister was flying back to New York in a few hours, and Charlie was going to go home to an empty house. It wasn't even her week to take care of the dog. Charlie stared at her father's casket. She didn't want to think about Rusty lying inside the cold metal box. She wanted to remember him smiling, winking at her, tapping his feet, beating out a staccato on the nearest table, telling one of his bullshit stories that he had told thousands of times before. She should have taken more pictures of him. She should have recorded his voice so she wouldn't forget the inflections, the annoying way he would stress the wrong words. There had been times in her life that Charlie had prayed that Rusty would just, please, for the love of God, shut the fuck up, but now all she wanted in the world was to hear his voice, to listen to one of his yarns, to recognize one of his obscure quotes, to feel that moment of clarity when she realized that the story, the odd line, the seemingly innocuous observation, was actually advice, and that the advice was usually, aggravatingly, worth taking. Charlie reached out to her father. She placed her palm flat to the side of the casket. She felt stupid for doing this, but she had to ask. "What do I do now, Daddy?" Charlie waited. For the first time in 41 years, Rusty did not have the answer.
Chapter 17. Charlie walked around the memory chapel with a glass of wine in her hand. Only her father would specify that alcohol be served at his funeral. There was hard liquor at the bar, but at noon it was too early for most, which was the first problem with Rusty's speedy funeral plans. The second problem was one that Sam had spotted early on, the sightseers, the hypocrites. Charlie felt bad for painting some of her former friends with this same brush. She couldn't blame them for choosing Ben over her. She would have chosen Ben, too. In a week or a month or maybe next year, their silent presence, their kind nods and smiles, would mean something. But right now, all she could concentrate on was the assholes. The townsfolk who had reviled Rusty for his liberal do-gooder ways were out in force. Judy Willard, who had called Rusty a murderer for representing an abortion facility. Abner Coleman, who had called him a bastard for representing a murderer. Whit Fieldman, who had called him a traitor for representing a bastard. The list could go on, but Charlie was too disgusted to go through it. The worst offender was Ken Coyne. The pustulant cocksucker stood at the center of a group of minions from the district attorney's office. Kaylee Collins was front and center. The young woman, who was probably cheating with Charlie's husband, didn't seem to get that she might not be wanted here. Then again, the entire legal community was treating this as a social occasion. Coyne was obviously telling a story about Rusty, some kind of courtroom antic her father had pulled. Charlie watched Kaylee throw back her head and laugh. She tossed her long blonde hair out of her eyes. She did that intimate thing that women do where they reach out and touch a man's arm in a way that only the man's wife could tell was inappropriate. Charlie drank her wine, wishing it was acid she could throw in the woman's face. Her phone started to ring. She walked toward an empty corner, answering it right before a voicemail picked up.
"It's me," Mason Huckabee said.
Charlie turned her back to the room, guilt manifesting itself in shame. "I told you not to call me."
"I'm sorry, I had to talk to you."
"No, you didn't," she told him. "Listen to me very carefully. What happened between us was the worst mistake of my life. I love my husband. I am not interested in you. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want anything to do with you. And if you call me again, I will slap you with a restraining order and make sure the State Board of Education knows that you've got a record against you for harassing a woman. Is that what you want?"
"No, Christ, dial it back, okay? Please."
He sounded desperate.
"Charlotte, I need to talk to you face to face. This is really important, bigger than both of us, bigger than what we did."
"That's where you're wrong," she assured him. "The biggest thing in my life is my relationship with my husband, and I am not going to let you get in the way of that."
"Charlotte, if you could..."
Charlie ended the call before he could spread any more of his bullshit. She dropped her phone back into her purse. She neatened her hair. She finished her glass of wine. She got another from the bar. Half of it was gone before she felt the shaking stop. Thank God Mason had only called on the phone. If he'd come to the funeral,
If the town had seen them together, if Ben had seen them, Charlie would have melted into a pool of self-disgust and hate.
Charlotte.
Newton Palmer, another shiftless lawyer in a room full of them, gave her a practiced look of condolence.
How are you doing?
Charlie finished her wine to drown out the curses. Newton was one of those prototypical old white men who ran most of the small towns in America. Ben had once said that all they had to do was wait for racist, sexist old bastards like Newton to die. What he hadn't realized was that they kept making new ones. Newton said,
I saw your father at a Rotary breakfast last week, virile as ever, but he said the most humorous thing.
That's Dad, humorous. Charlie pretended to listen to the man's stupid Rotary story as she looked for her sister. Sam was trapped, too, by Mrs. Duncan, her eighth-grade English teacher. Sam was nodding and smiling, but Charlie could not imagine her sister having much patience for idle conversation. Sam's sense of otherness was more pronounced in the crowd, not because of her disabilities, but because she was clearly not of this place, or maybe not even of this time. The dark glasses, the regal tilt to her head, the way Sam dressed did not exactly help her blend in, even at a funeral. She was dressed in all black, but the wrong black, the kind of black that was only available to the 1%. Standing next to her ancient teacher, Sam looked like a silk bag of money by the proverbial sow's ear.
It's like watching your mother.
Lenore was wearing a tight black dress and heels that were higher than Charlie's. She smiled at Newton.
Mr. Palmer.
Newton blanched.
Charlotte, if you'll excuse me.
Lenore ignored him, so Charlie did too. She pressed her shoulder into Lenore's as they both watched Sam. Mrs. Duncan was still talking her ear off. Lenore said,
Harriet wanted so badly to connect with people, but she never quite solved the equation.
She connected with Dad.
Your father was an aberration. They were two singular people who functioned best when they were together.
Charlie leaned closer into her arm. I didn't think you'd come.
I couldn't resist taunting these hateful bastards one last time. Listen.
Lenore took a deep breath, as if preparing herself for something difficult.
I think I'm going to retire to Florida. Be among my people, bitter old white women living on fixed incomes.
Charlie smoothed together her lips. She couldn't cry again. She couldn't make Lenore feel guilty for doing what she needed to do.
Oh, sweetheart.
Lenore wrapped her arm around Charlie's waist. She put her mouth to Charlie's ear.
I am never going to leave you. I'm just going to be somewhere else, and you can come visit me. I'll make a special bedroom for you with pictures of horses on the walls and kittens and possums.
Charlie laughed. Lenore said,
It's time for me to move on. I've fought the good fight long enough.
Dad loved you.
Of course he did. And I love you.
Lenore kissed the side of her head.
Speaking of love.
Ben was making his way through the crowd. He held up his hands as he darted around an old man who looked like he had a story to tell. Ben said a few hellos to people he knew, constantly moving forward, easily detaching himself from hangers-on. People always smiled when they saw Ben. Charlie felt herself smiling, too.
Hey.
He smoothed down his tie.
Is this a girls-only thing?
Lenore said,
I was just about to antagonize your boss.
She kissed Charlie again before sidling over to Ken Coyne. The district attorney's group broke away, but Lenore trapped Coyne like a cheetah with a baby warthog. Charlie told Ben,
Lenore's going to retire to Florida.
He did not seem surprised.
Not much left for her with your dad gone.
Just me.
Charlie couldn't think about Lenore leaving. It hurt too much. She asked Ben,
Did you pick out Dad's suit?
That was all rusty, he said.
Hold out your hand.
Charlie held out her hand. He reached into his coat pocket. He pulled out a red ball. He placed it in her palm.
You're welcome.
Charlie looked down at the red clown nose and smiled. Ben said, Come outside.
Why?
Ben waited, patient as ever. Charlie put down the glass of wine. She tucked the clown nose into her purse as she followed him outside. The first thing she noticed was the thick smog of cigarette smoke. The second thing she noticed was that she was surrounded by cons. Their ill-fitting suits could not hide the prison tattoos and lean muscle that came from hours of pumping iron in the yard. There were dozens of men and women, maybe as many as 50. These were Rusty's real mourners, smoking outside, like the bad kids behind the gym at school.
Charlotte, one of the men seized her hand. I want to tell you how much your daddy meant to me. Helped me get my kid back.
Charlie felt herself smile as she shook the man's rough hand.
Helped me find a job, another man said.
His front teeth were rotted, but the fine comb marks in his oily hair showed that he had made an effort for Rusty.
He was all right.
A woman flicked a cigarette toward the overflowing ashtray by the door.
Made my dickhead ex-husband pay child support.
Come on,
another guy said, likely the dickhead ex-husband. Ben winked at Charlie before going back inside. An assistant district attorney wasn't popular with this crowd. Charlie shook more hands. She tried not to cough from all the smoke. She listened to stories about Rusty helping people when no one else seemed inclined to do so. She wanted to go back inside and get Sam, because her sister would want to hear what these people had to say about their complicated, irascible father. Or maybe Sam wouldn't want to. Maybe she would need to. Sam had always been so starkly drawn to black and white. The gray areas, the ones that Rusty seemed to thrive in, had always mystified her. Charlie laughed to herself. The paradox was not lost on her that after unburdening to Sam her deepest, darkest sins, Charlie felt that the most important thing Sam could take back home with her was the knowledge that their father had been a good man.
Charlotte?
Jimmy Jack Little blended in well with the cons. He had more tattoos than most of them, including a sleeve that he'd gotten during a prison stint for bank robbery. His black fedora put him in another place and time. He seemed perpetually angry, like it was to his utter disappointment that he was not one of the good guys being corrupted by a bad doll in a 1940s noir novel. Thanks for coming. Charlie hugged his neck, something she had never done before and probably would never do again. Dad would have been happy you were here.
Yeah, well.
He seemed overcome by the physical contact. He took his time lighting a cigarette, restoring his sense of macho toughery.
Sorry about the old shit. I expected him to go down in a blaze of bullets.
I'm glad he didn't, Charlie said, because her father had been stabbed 2 days ago. Being shot to death was too close a possibility for her to joke about.
This Adam Humphrey punk. Jimmy Jack picked some tobacco off his lip. Not sure I got a bead on him. Could be he was buttering her biscuit, but kids today, girls and boys, they can be friends without the boom chicka wow wow.
He shrugged away the inexplicableness, the way he would shrug off self-driving cars and TiVo.
Now, Frank Alexander, him I know from a couple years back. Guy had a DUI that Rusty helped disappear.
Dad worked with the Alexander family? Charlie realized her voice was too loud. She whispered, What happened?
Pay-as-you-go, as far as old Russ was concerned. Nothing unusual about their interaction. What happened was, Frank was burping his worm in the wrong mole hole. Got a little sauced with the gal at the no-tell motel, then came home to the wifey stinking of another chick's perfume. Or tried to go home. Cop slapped him with a DUI less safe.
Charlie knew this meant Frank Alexander's breathalyzer had been below the legal limit, but he was still charged with the DUI because the officer deemed his driving was impaired. She asked, The girlfriend, was she a student?
A real estate agent, a lot older than the wife, which doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense because why? I mean, she's got money, sure, but chicks ain't classics like cars.
You want the soap at the end of your rope to be fresh, am I right?
Charlie did not want to open up a discussion on the finer points of cheating. So, what happened to Frank Alexander?
He did.